and gentlemen, good morning. It is Terrific Tuesday, April 17th, 2012. This is the Think and Grow Rich call. My name is Paul Hutchings, dialing in from Southeast Idaho. I'll tell you, I love what Rick Martin said the other day. I am Paul Hutchings. I love people, and I am a deep thinker, and I am a serious student of the book Think and Grow Rich. And if you're on this call, you are a serious student right along with me, or you are deciding to become one. And if you are already are one or are deciding to become one, I want to reach through the phone and give you a hug and tell you that you are have embarked upon one of the greatest journeys that you can ever embark upon in your entire life. This book is absolutely amazing. It will transform your life if you become a serious student and apply what this book teaches. And that's what we do on this call every morning, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and everywhere in between all throughout the country, is we study a piece of this book, and then we have a mastermind discussion after we go through that particular piece of content. And we are close to finishing out the book. We're in the chapter entitled The Six Ghosts of Fear. And obviously, if we want to develop the state of mind known as faith, if we want to have that power come into our life where we are people who are moving forward in a major way, undeterred by the ghosts of fear, unfettered, unrestrained, we absolutely need to understand what the fears are and how to conquer them. And yesterday we talked about the first, the head of the six ghosts of fear, entitled The Fear of Poverty. And today we're going to jump into the number two fear, and this is a big one. The content portion of the call is fairly short today, but I'll tell you, we could probably talk for days and days and days and days on this particular fear alone. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the fear of criticism. Just how man originally came by this fear, no one can state definitely, but one thing is certain. He has it in a highly developed form. Some believe that this fear made its appearance about the time that politics became a profession. Others believe it can be traced to the age when women first began to concern themselves with styles in wearing apparel. This author, being neither a humorist nor a prophet, is inclined to attribute the basic fear of criticism to that part of man's inherited nature which prompts him to not only take away his fellow man's goods and wares, but to justify his action by criticism of his fellow man's character. It is a well-known fact that a thief will criticize the man from whom he steals, that politicians seek office not by displaying their own virtues and qualifications, but by attempting to besmirch their opponents. The fear of criticism takes on many forms, the majority of which are petty and trivial. Bald-headed men, for example, are bald for no other reason than their fear of criticism. Heads become bald because of the tight-fitting bands of hats which cut off circulation from the roots of the hair. Men wear hats not because they actually need them, but mainly because everyone is doing it. The individual falls into line and does likewise, lest some other individual criticize him. Women seldom have bald heads or even thin hair because they wear hats which fit their heads loosely, the only purpose of hats being adornment. But it must not be supposed that women are free from the fear of criticism. If any woman claims to be superior to man with reference to this fear, ask her to walk down the street wearing a hat of the vintage of 1890. The astute manufacturers of clothing have not been slow to capitalize this basic fear of criticism, with which all mankind has been cursed. Every season, the styles in many articles of wearing apparel change. Who establishes the styles? Certainly not the purchaser of clothing, but the manufacturer. Why does he change the styles so often? The answer is obvious. He changes the styles so he can sell more clothes. For the same reason, the manufacturers of automobiles, with a few very rare and sensible exceptions, change styles of models every season. No man wants to drive an automobile which is not of the latest style, although the older model may actually be the better car. We have been describing the manner in which people behave under the influence of fear of criticism as applied to the small and petty things of life. Let us now examine human behavior when this fear affects people in connection with the more important events of human relationship. Take, for example, practically any person who has reached the age of mental maturity from 35 to 40 as a general average, and if you could read the secret thoughts of his mind, you would find a very decided disbelief in most of the fables taught by the majority of dogmatists and theologians a few decades back. Not often, however, you will find a person who has the courage to openly state his belief on the subject. Most people will, if pressed far enough, tell a lie rather than admit they do not believe some of the stories associated with that form of religion which held people in bondage prior to the age of scientific discovery and education. Why does the average person, even in this day of enlightenment, shy away from denying his belief in the fables which were the basis of most of the religions a few decades ago? The answer is because of the fear of criticism. Men and women have been burned at the stake for daring to express disbelief in ghosts. It is no wonder we have inherited a consciousness which makes us fear criticism. The time was, and not so far in the past, when criticism carried severe punishments. It still does in some countries. The fear of criticism robs man of his initiative, destroys his power of imagination, limits his individuality, takes away his self-reliance, and does him damage in 100 other ways. Parents often do their children irreparable injury by criticizing them. The mother of one of my boyhood chums used to punish him with a switch almost daily, always completing the job with the statement, "You'll land in the penitentiary before you are 20. He was sent to a reformatory at the age of 17. Criticism is the one form of service of which everyone has too much. Everyone has a stock of it which is handed out gratis, whether called for or not. One's nearest relatives often are the worst offenders. It should be recognized as a crime. In reality, it is a crime of the worst nature for any parent to build inferiority complexes in the mind of a child through unnecessary criticism. Employers who understand human nature get the best there is in men, not by criticism, but by constructive suggestion. Parents may accomplish the same results with their children. Criticism will plant fear in the human heart or resentment, but it will not build love or affection. Symptoms of the fear of criticism. This fear is almost as universal as the fear of poverty, and its effects are just as fatal to personal achievement, mainly because this fear destroys initiative and discourages the use of imagination. The major symptoms of fear are, 1, self-consciousness, generally expressed through nervousness, timidity in conversation and in meeting strangers, awkward movement of the hands and limbs, shifting of the eyes. 2, lack of poise, expressed through lack of voice control, nervousness in the presence of others, poor posture of body, poor memory. Personality, lacking in firmness of decision, personal charm, and ability to express opinions definitely. The habit of sidestepping issues instead of meeting them squarely, agreeing with others without careful examination of their opinions. Inferiority complex, the habit of expressing self-approval by word of mouth and by actions as a means of covering up a feeling of inferiority. Using big words to impress others, often without knowing the real meaning of words. Imitating others in dress, speech, and manners. Boasting of imaginary achievements. This sometimes gives a surface appearance of feeling of superiority. Extravagance. The habit of trying to keep up with the Joneses, spending beyond one's income. Lack of initiative, failure to embrace opportunities for self-advancement, fear to express opinions, lack of confidence in one's own ideas, giving evasive answers to questions asked by superiors, hesitancy of manner and speech, deceit in both words and deeds. And the last one, lack of ambition, mental and physical laziness, lack of self-assertion, slowness in reaching decisions, easily influenced by others, the habit of criticizing others behind their backs and flattering them to their faces, the habit of accepting defeat without protest, quitting an undertaking when opposed by others, suspicious of other people without cause, lacking in tactfulness of manner and speech, unwillingness to accept the blame for mistakes. And ladies and gentlemen, those of us who are in the network marketing industry face this fear from when we first start our business, clear all the way up. I don't know if it does ever stop, but when we first begin our business, we have to face that fear of what are people going to think. And I'll tell you, that this fear of criticism stops most people dead in their tracks, because all of us know somebody, whether it's a friend or a relative, who thinks that network marketing is some sort of illegal, illegitimate pyramid scheme, and they do not hesitate to express that ignorant opinion. And unless we know where we're going and have confidence, that fear of criticism will prevent us from picking up the phone, or it'll stop us from continuing to pick up the phone once we receive that little tiny little bit of negative feedback, and it paralyzes most people and keeps them just stuck right in their tracks and continuing on in a path that is not satisfactory to them, but that they stay in because it's comfortable, because it lacks fear of criticism, that comfortableness. It, you know, they'd rather stay in that position. So when we start the business, we face this fear of criticism, and as we grow and progress and have a little success and get a few more eyes on us, it doesn't stop. The criticism is going to continue to come. And the second danger we run into when we overcome those first few criticisms is if we know where we're going and we are committed to the path that we've selected, and we start to give in to the fear of criticism, it can take us off our path. You know, I was talking to Todd yesterday on the call. He's one of our valued callers, very experienced and successful in the industry, and he made a comment that I recognize from the book Think and Grow Rich. But it really, you know, when you're talking to people and you hear a bit of truth and you're listening and you're someone who's looking for truth, when you hear that truth, it just resonates with you and it just sticks with you. And Todd made the comment yesterday that poor people have the habit of making decisions slowly and changing them often. And rich people have the habit of making decisions swiftly and rarely, if ever, changing them. Well, what does that have to do with the fear of criticism? Well, the reason poor people change their minds so much is because usually they are influenced and swayed by every little bit of newspaper blowing in the wind, or every little opinion, or every, you know, word or comment from somebody who probably has no position to be giving an opinion. And rich people, they commit to their vision. They commit to where they're going. They commit to, you know, their major definite purpose and their plan of action, whom they have maybe had that plan checked by members of a mastermind group who are people who are qualified to give an opinion, and they settle in on that course of action, and they do not change. They are not swayed. They are not influenced by the fear of criticism. I want to destroy this fear from my life, ladies and gentlemen, completely, and I hope you have that desire with me. Now, I want to share one final quote before I open up the lines for discussion, and this is a quote from the book The Law of Success from the 1925 manuscript Lessons, Napoleon Hill, and this quote says this, and I think it is wise. Who told you it couldn't be done? And what great achievement has he to his credit that qualifies him to judge your ability? We would do well to ask ourselves that question every time a little piece of criticism comes our way. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited to hear your comments, so let me open up the lines. Star 6 to unmute your line.
Hi, this is Rick Martin. I want to jump on this one.
Please.
Okay. Since we're talking about this great book, this great Bible, this great reference from Napoleon Hill, reference for life, reference for achieving, for believing, believing in the unseen until it comes in the scene. Just keep fighting and keep pushing. Napoleon Hill received more criticism probably than anyone on earth. He was considered a very fool man, foolish guy, to be accepting to do work and laboring for 20 years without compensation. 20 years! Andrew Carnegie asked him to do this. Now, what's interesting is that he pointed out that his mom, that loss of his mom, was one of the greatest things that happened to him. And let me explain. His dad married a well-educated woman, became obviously his stepmother. She was the one who believed in him more than anyone else in the world. Was her. He had what he called a triangle. Himself, Andrew Carnegie, and his stepmother. He said there were two things that happened in his life: the death of his mom, and the affliction of his son born without physical sign of ears. He received more criticism about this undertaking, the undertaking to take on, to develop this philosophy of success that Andrew Carnegie knew would work for anyone. Imagine this. He made the decision in 26 seconds to take on this. Even he questioned Andrew Carnegie, whether Andrew Carnegie selected the right person. But he said that every time he got the corner, turned the corner where he would have doubts, was his stepmother always said, "I believe in you. You're going to be the richest Hill in this family." Just one person kept uplifting him. One person kept believing them when everybody else say, "Man, you're the dumbest guy on earth." But he never stopped, simply because one other voice between, well, it was with his, obviously, with his stepmom more often, but between those two people believed in him. And he did it because of this gentleman. He wouldn't let criticism stop him. And so we have to thank Andrew Carnegie, and we have to thank his stepmother. It's incredible. If that's not something to say for you to develop what he called a skin thick as the rhino, I don't know what else will. All right, back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Rick. Great points. And I, for one, am so grateful of Napoleon's example of overcoming his fear of criticism. Has changed my life dramatically. Whose lives will be changed by you overcoming and us overcoming the fear of criticism. Star 6, who's next?
Hey, Paul.
Yes, good morning, Melvin.
Hey, good morning to you. One way of overcoming that fear of criticism comes back to a love of self. To the degree that you love yourself and believe in yourself, that doesn't concern you any longer. It becomes the other person's problem. And you can't possibly do more for yourself than to become the center of your own life, to love yourself, to believe in yourself, to where criticism doesn't affect you any longer. And when you take that chain off of you, there's not too much you can't do. So if we really buy into that, really buy into accepting ourselves, loving ourselves, believing in ourselves, then it becomes the other person's problem, their criticisms or their thoughts or their feelings. And I'll tell you, it's a beautiful place to get to. when you can criticize someone, you can keep them down, you can hold them back. And we tend to do that because small people tend to believe that it's to their advantage to do so. So it's been done to many people. It's been done in the past. It's been done to keep black people down. It's been done to keep women down. Anytime you can say something and have somebody buy into it, you can imprison them. And once they buy into it, you don't need to imprison them any longer. They imprison themselves. So it's having this understanding, and it can truly set you free. I find it very interesting that the majority of people, especially in this country or any country, we tend to, and that's where I get to this religion thing so often, is everybody's, I'm a Christian, You know, you don't have to really believe. I'm going to pretend I am in order not to be criticized. But most people don't believe. You can tell by their actions what people really believe in. Anyway, back to you, Paul.
Appreciate those thoughts, Melvin. And I just wanted to share real quick. Last night I ran into some criticisms. I was talking to somebody who started to tell me that, well, you know, I've been talking to certain people and they've had these comments to say about you. And I stopped them right there and I said, you know what? I could care less about people who are sitting around backbiting and talking about me behind my back. And I said, do you know why? The reason why is because I know my heart, I know where I'm going, I know my intentions, and I'm totally happy with those things. And I'm not going to be deterred by people that are sitting around, you know, talking negatively about me. And I was able to say that with confidence because I've invested the last 2 years working on myself and my self-confidence and following through with what Napoleon has taught daily, major definite purpose, where do I want to go? Asking myself that every day, thinking about it, pondering it, repeating that self-confidence formula, telling myself I know that I have the ability to achieve the object of my definite purpose in life, and then going through working on my belief system, working on, you know, my direction. I'm very, very confident about where I'm going, and I'm happy with where I'm going. And I'm happy. I mean, obviously, there's always room for improvement, but I'm out there to help people, and I know that, and I know that's what I'm doing. And so, when these little criticisms come out, I am for the most part, I'm able to shake them off, and that's it. That is wow, that's powerful. Thanks to Napoleon Hill. But wanted to share that quick example. Criticisms are going to come, and if we don't, as Melvin said, know who we are, know where we're going, have that, you know, that real belief and confidence and understanding of who we are and what we're about and what is our purpose. When we really start to get a piece of that, we're really able to eliminate these criticisms that come in. Star City,
may I say something there, Paul Hutchings?
Yes.
This is Bill Hartranft calling from the beach in Florida, and I just wanted to say that I believe that constructive criticism and criticism are two completely different animals or entities, and I completely agree with what you're saying. If you have difficulties in your life, if you have challenges in your life, if you have problems with your daily situation, it may take somebody to come into your life and point out your own human iniquities, your own developmental problems, your own direction. And so that kind of criticism is constructive criticism, which can then help you to see where you may be missing the point, where you may be failing yourself. And like Paul just said, we are all our own entities. We are all our own energies. And once we are confident with what that energy and entity is, there's nothing we can't do. It's amazing what we can do. There's nothing we can't do. You can go out and sponsor as many people as you want today because you make up your mind that I'm going to spread the love. Positive energy attracts positive energy. And guess what? Those people want to be associated with you. And that's always giving your services greater than the cash value you're receiving. But back to criticism. Constructive criticism can open doors for you. So don't always, we get very defensive when people start to criticize us. We put our walls up. To defend ourselves, human nature. It's human nature. But if you believe and trust and love and understand that person and realize that they are there just pointing out something that they see that you might not see, take it. Take it in. Let's see if it drives you into a new direction or not. Criticism, on the other hand, like Paul was talking about, he has made up his mind. I'm going in a direction. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. I've worked on myself. I know what I'm capable of. I'm going somewhere. Nobody's stopping me. And so your criticisms mean nothing to me because they don't change me and they're not going to make anything better for me. Bingo. And that's the direction we all need to be going in. Back to you, Paul.
I appreciate those thoughts, Bill, and very, very relevant point. There is something to be said for learning from constructive criticism, but here's the key that I think that is really important for us all to understand. And Napoleon teaches us this in Think and Grow Rich. Be very selective of your mastermind group of people and take criticism from those people whom you have carefully selected to give you the criticism and the feedback. See, most people just want to throw out criticism, and again, this quote that I shared from Napoleon Hill, who told you it couldn't be done, and what great achievement has he to his credit that qualifies him to judge your ability? We have to become very good at looking at the source from which the criticism comes and be very careful about what we do and what we don't give heed to. A very, very good point. Appreciate that.
Paul,
I want to relay on that. I really want to relay on this, what you guys just talked about, because I got to tell you, man, I got to fired up on this. Let me relay if you allow me to, because I'm going to tell you something. You shut down nonsense, okay? The first, you got to get the knowledge. You have to have the knowledge, okay? If you're going to get your relative to come and talk about an industry that does billions, this industry does billions. This industry is responsible for more millionaires than any other industry in the world. Facts. Those are facts, okay? Secondly, you know what? If somebody is telling you that this bloody thing is a pyramid, then you say, yes. You know what? The pyramid, the head is on top. I'm in a pyramid all my life. My head's been on the top. Can you imagine if your head was on the bottom? It'd be flipping around like a bloody chicken without the head. Listen to me. You have fun with this stuff, okay? Look around you. How many people have made millions and billions in this business? You see, you're going to listen to a relative or some joker? I mean, this industry does billions. You got to be kidding me. The people who endorse this industry are the people you want to listen to, not jokers, not cracker lackers. Listen to me, people. This, you just got to understand. That's the attitude you got to carry with yourself. Another thing about criticism. Are you kidding me? Criticism, you should profit from criticism on both sides. Because nobody's going to kick a dead dog, okay? You see, every time people criticize Walmart, they get bigger. Every time people criticize bloody well Microsoft, they get bigger. The more you criticize, the bigger you ought to get. You think about this. Nobody kicks a dead dog. Secondly, a lot of time criticism are closer to the truth of yourself than you realize it. Profit from your criticism. Like Bill talks about constructive criticism, and the other criticism is going to help you grow on both sides of the coin. Criticism, freaking great. Because you know there's a jealousy around it. That means you're doing something right. And then the other side, you're missing something. You have a blind spot that you can't see for yourself. And so you drop your ego and said, what can I learn from this? Okay? Einstein, one of the most quoted, has been quoted trillions of times, said he was wrong 99% of the time. 99% of the time, Einstein said he was wrong. His conclusions were wrong. So what about us? Get over this thing. Use criticism as a stepping stone. The better yourself, and you know, have a little grin on your face, you know you're going somewhere. Get fired up, man. Get fired up. That's what I'm saying. I hope it was worth it. I jumped in because I'm fired. You fired me up with this. All right, go ahead.
Appreciate it, Rick. Nobody kicks a dead dog. That's a new quote that I love in relation to credit. If you're getting kicked, it's because you're alive and moving and making things happen. Appreciate that. I did hear a female voice coming out there with Rick. Who was that?
It was Jody.
Patty?
Jody Peterson from Florida.
Oh, hi, Jody. Welcome to the call.
Jody.
Jetty.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, Jetty. Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. I agree with everything that's been said, but I also have been through some lot of criticism in my short life. And I can say that for me, maybe some of the others, that if you are 95% correct in what you are saying, the criticism is not as bad, because if you're 95% correct, you know for a fact that you're 95% correct in what you are saying. You can go straight forward with what you are doing, and everybody else will go to the wayside. They will see that you are positive in what you are doing. They will come along after a while, if they're interested. Back to you, Paul.
Great comment, Jetty. Thank you so much for sharing that. Star 6, who's next?
Paul Todd Young.
From Florida.
Todd Young, go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone. Everybody, great comments on this subject from everybody. And Rick, you're not allowed to use my get fired up. I think I invented that 49 years ago, but I guess you can still use it. That's my favorite saying, because I am constantly fired up. I tell you, I wanted to share a story that was shared to me about 22 years ago. And, you know, criticism is something that, you know, I was always taught as a young child to take from my mastermind group as well, which were usually people that were doing much better than I. I mean, criticism can be negative. Criticism can be positive. Majority of the people out there in life in the society that we live in here in America, 97% of people are broke, so 97% of 100 people you run into are going to give you negative criticism based on their thoughts and their beliefs. That's why we do not allow it into our brains and into our minds when we go forward in our daily life. Criticism is nothing but other people's opinions. They're dream stealers, S-O-P-O. I don't surround myself personally with dream stealers. And Rick and Melvin, I tell you, hit it on the head when you said love of self. I mean, that is really what it's all about. And, you know, it's a jealousy. Also, Rick mentioned that, which is all so true. Criticism is meant to hold you down. And the story that was told to me many years ago was the story of the elephant. We've all been to a circus. We've seen these 9-ton elephants that are sitting there with this small little rope attached to a small little chain that goes into the concrete. And it's obvious to us adults that elephant at any one time could take that chain and rip it out of the ground and run over, you know, everybody that's in the stands. But that elephant doesn't do that, and there's a reason why. Is because when that elephant was younger, that elephant was tied to a very large rope, to a very large eye hook that went 5 feet into the concrete, and that elephant tried to get away from that rope and tried and pulled. And that rope, by the way, is a criticism in our lives when we are younger. People love to criticize because people love to hold people down. They don't want you to achieve more than what they haven't achieved in life. So that elephant consistently through its young life tries to tear away from that eye hook and cannot do it. So that repetitive action of trying to get away, which is our repetitive actions of trying to get away from the negative criticism in our lives, make us grow older like that elephant. And that elephant really succumbs to the fact that they'll never, even though they physically at any one moment could instantaneously tear themselves away from that huge eye hook and that rope that's tied to their leg, their minds don't let them do it as a result of that criticism. And that rope that is tied to their bodies that disable them from going forward in life, that is what happens to us. And, you know, very wise thing to say to profit from criticism, because those are the dream stealers that I wish would call me on a daily basis and criticize me and tell me that I'm not going to make it doing whatever it is that I'm going to do. Because those criticisms to me, you know, are motivation to me. And I have a good saying that I say to myself every day whenever I consistently hear any kind of negative criticism, whenever I am in my life, and that is don't corner me. I live in a circle. So I prohibit these criticisms from coming into my brain, into my eyes, into my ears. And my mastermind group and my invisible counselors that I have that are on my shoulders constantly have those rhino shields in front of them, and I have my rhino skin around my body, so I prohibit those negative criticisms coming into my life. And as far as constructive criticism, is an absolutely positive thing. That's the positive side of criticism. And I personally will take constructive criticism from someone if you're making more money than me. Paul, back to you.
Love your thoughts and story and comments, Todd. Thank you. Don't corner me. I live in a circle. I love that. Star 6, who's next? And, folks, if you have opened up your line and you're not talking, please press star 6 to mute your line back out. We're still getting a little bit of breathing into the phone. So star 6 to mute your line. Who's next?
Judy, Florida.
Hey, Judy.
Hey. You know, what I have to say is I've lived with a philosophy for more than 30 years now. That philosophy is that what people think of me is absolutely none of my business. What is my business is what I think of myself. What is my business is what I do for myself. I'm very fortunate in my upbringing, although we all come from dysfunctional families. My family has brought myself and my three sisters up to be very confident people in whatever it is that we undertake. You know, and one of the things that I did, I'm originally from Los Angeles, and I was around during Charles Manson. And around the same age as the girls who were murdering. And I didn't get it. I didn't get somebody doing my thinking for me. But I was so tired of the negativity. I've quit watching the news. I quit watching the news a long, long time ago because it's negative. And that's the kind of stuff, and it's gossip. And I don't do either one. I wake up with an attitude every day of asking that I'm generous of heart and thought of all people at all times. That way I don't catch myself into criticizing others because I have no business doing that. I have no business judging. My business is what I'm doing for myself, like it's been said before. What am I doing for myself today? You know, and those are things, and like I said last week, I read this book, 1989, 1988, and incorporated so much into my life, and I was working on myself back then, to be a better person. I didn't look at the money aspect. I was looking at what I could do for myself to be a better person, what I could do to be of service to others. And I am at a crossroads now of, okay, it's time to put into practice the money coming to me. And I have hit the jackpot. That's all I can say. I have hit the jackpot. And I'm grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you. Back to you, Paul.
Judy, thank you so much for those great comments and appreciate your amazing philosophy on life. And we all can pick up things from what you've just shared and implement into our own philosophy and profit tremendously and hit the jackpot right along with you. So thank you. Star 6, who's next? Star 6, anyone else want to jump out here?
Well, this is, getting there again, if nobody wants to get in, but together, you know, we're all responsible for this criticism because we've heard so many no's and this and that, and people always focus on the negative. They never look at your strengths. They always focus on your weakness. So society really is responsible for that. You can't really blame some guy out there willing to criticize you because That's what society is from the jump. Always wanting to anchor you. Anchor. You just look at it and say, well, I understand. I pity you. I understand where it came from. You got to develop that knowledge, that understanding, realizing that it just came to them because that's how nobody taught them differently. No one taught them differently. You see, that's what that is. You develop that and understand where that came from. It's been rooted into society. Negative is automatic. So positive has to be cultivated. You know, I like what they've done in the well-done philosophy. I like what dog trainers do. They always reward the little dogs or the whales. They reward them when they do something good, no matter how small it is. And once they focus on the good, why would they do bad? They're not going to get rewarded. And so when we start developing this, when you quit focusing on what people are doing wrong, really. All of us on the line ought to quit talking about what people are doing wrong and start talking about what they're doing right. It's automatically going to uplift people. I'm telling you this. No matter how small it is, you look for the good in people, period. The people that I'm developing around me, I demonstrate that. And they're doing that in practice. And I'm telling you, you look for the good. You get what you're going looking for. If you look at all the things wrong that people are doing, you also are going to get it. It's going to be in your face all the time. And so it's going to take up space and time where you're not even going out yourself. And all you're just talking about is what they're doing wrong. Start talking about what they need to do right and what they're doing right. Let them know what you did that was good. Work on it and get better at it. Then we'll focus on that. Don't focus on what they're doing wrong or what they're saying wrong all the time. Say this instead. It's very difficult, nearly impossible, to forget something that you're trying to forget. You understand this on this line? Don't follow people that are not willing to go that direction, but you know better, so you do better. It's interesting to me that people will give sound advice to their children, but somehow they're indifferent to those very same advice and not apply it to themselves. It's interesting, but it's a great thought. Think about it. It's a great way to start the morning. If you start the morning well like you're doing, chances are you're going to have a fantastic day. That's what we're doing on this line. You have people on this line that are encouraging you, lifting you up every day. You work in a spirit of harmony. You borrow the spirit from each other. I remember about a week ago, Paul and I stumbled up on some content at the very same time. Paul, do you remember this content? A rare audio recording of Napoleon Hill?
Yes, I do.
It's incredible.
Shared with me, actually, by another member on this call, Todd, told me about those.
You see,
so three of us.
Fantastic. It's incredible, my friend. But
good
you
stuff.
See, we're working in the spirit of harmony. Well, you don't know something you don't know, like our friend there, Andrew Carnegie, knew nothing about the manufacturer and the marketing of steel. But he borrowed the knowledge from 20 other guys. He said, it was my skill, ability to get those people working together in a spirit of harmony. Let's bring me back to our friend, and that's a quote I use, Henry Ford. Coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is success. That's what I have to say for the rest of the day. Right back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Rick. Always appreciate you, my friend. Star 6, who's next?
Paul, it's
Paul, good morning. It's Fran.
I think Anita, was that Anita? I think Anita beat you by just a millisecond there. Was that Anita?
No, it was Lindy, but...
Oh, Lindy. Go ahead, Lindy, and then Doc, please.
Well, I just wanted to point out that whenever we have, you know, self-love and we love others, we're more accepting of what point everyone is on their path. Not all of us are on the same path. And those of us that, you know, we choose to learn and grow and take the path of self-improvement, I think we're more accepting and we realize more that we are all on different levels. We are all seeing through the different filters. And we are not meant to be a mediocre someone else. We're meant to be an excellent us. So whenever someone, you know, and I've had lots of criticism in my life because I've tried a lot of different things and I've worked hard and I've learned through every situation. They always haven't come out successful, but I did learn. And so I got that tool from that lesson and took it and started something else. And, you know, it's brought me to where I am today. And that's the way all of us are. We're picking up tools all the way through our journey to one day we will be successful if we do not give up and just be accepting of others. And we can tell with that sixth sense if someone's criticism is meant to hurt us and pull us down or is meant to help us so we can be lifted a little bit higher. So thank you, everybody.
Great comments, Lindy. Thank you so much for those. Doc Fran, go ahead, sir.
Well, Lindy really hit, and as well as Rick, a couple great comments from a lot of people this morning. And I loved his line, you know, people don't kick a dead dog. So, but Paul, I just want to point out that, you know, you handled that situation last night exactly perfectly. And this whole thing of criticism, both given and received, is just a function, as Lindy said, of how someone else is filtering you. And in very often cases, we've talked about mirroring. It's also very often a verbalization of a fear that they have within themselves. A wise man once said to me that the supply of free advice far outstrips the demand. And so when you receive unsolicited advice from individuals, you do have to come back to your knowingness about your own intention in your actions, and you also have to be conversant with or aware of the potential intentions of the advisor. So, you know, it cuts both ways. Criticisms always work because all of us have a sensitivity to some fears. We all have a desire for perfectionism to varying degrees. And so because none of us are perfect, we are susceptible to going through criticism. And, you know, you'll allow things to creep in where you may try and measure yourself by an unrealistic yardstick and beat yourself up. So that's why it's successful. That's why it works so well. When you are true to your intention, as then it really becomes, it just becomes a non-entity. It's just another event, and it's only the significance that we attach to it. So, one of the ways to offset criticism when it comes is to be humorous about it. And humor is the lubricant that allows us to move smoothly through life. And if somebody is really getting down on your case and you start to feel yourself going at effect of that, you know, focus on humor, find the humor situation, find a response. And if that's impossible for you, there's a story that I'll tell one of these days about unfair allegations and criticisms. And the response to it is, when someone lodges an allegation, is that so? And if we can master the control of self to the point where we can allow ourselves to respond to attacks by, is that so, all things come clear in time. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you very much, Doc.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, go ahead.
You know, one of the things that I tend to do with criticism is to give some thought to it. We should all give some thought to everything that's said. And if you were to do that, you would be able to pick out the part of the criticism that can be beneficial to you, and you can gain from it, and you know that it was something that actually made you a bigger and stronger person. Or you can see why the person is saying what they're saying, why they're manipulating or making their comment. You can see everything for exactly what it is. And you can do that with every single thing said to you that's criticism. But you've got to be thinking. It's very important that we become responsible for ourselves and learn to use this thing, this gift that we've been given. And in doing so, you can cipher through all the criticism. And it could always be beneficial to you. It could be beneficial to you in terms of what you could learn and gain from it. It could be beneficial to you to know where that person's coming from, why they're saying that, what's behind the whole thing. Any way that you look at it, it could be a benefit. But you've got to be thinking. You've got to be using your mind. That's the responsibility each of us has. Back to you, Paul.
Great points, Melvin. Thank you. Star 6, who's next?
Judy from Florida.
Go ahead, Judy.
I double dipping here. I was listening to what Doc was saying about the attitude of perfectionism. The one thing that I did with that about 25, 26 years ago was realize that I think we have the wrong definition of perfect. You know, if people have mentioned religion and Christianity and things like that, and what I take from that is that we're told that all things in God's world are perfect. And when I look, I'm sitting here looking at the beautiful Florida, you know, skyline here. I look at a tree. There's not a leaf exactly the same, but yet they're all perfect. So I've come to believe that perfect for me is individual characteristic. And that has helped me tremendously to keep my nose out of other people's business and keep it in mind. You know, Lindy's right. We are all on our own path. And if the one thing I know and I've learned in life is, if I'm thinking of you, I'm taken care of. If I'm concerned with you, I'm taken care of. And that's generosity of heart that I value. And that goes with the idea and the knowledge that we are all on our own path, and I cannot judge your path. If I do not want to be judged, I'm not going to judge. If I don't want to be criticized, I'm not going to criticize you. And the funny thing is at the moment I'm living with a friend who's a better friend, if I'm not living with him and his family, who criticizes everything I think, everything I say, everything I do. And it falls off me like water. I don't allow it to penetrate. I listen. I take into thought, and I'll either, you know, put it on the burner to let it boil and consider it, or else I'll just, you know, or put it on the back burner to look at it later, or I'll let it fall off. because I realize where that person is at the moment, where that person is coming from at this moment. And it is that person's way to do those things. Don't fault him for it. I sidestep it. You know, he's going to say what he's going to say, and I'm going to listen or not. And that's just, and that's it with everything. I'll either take it into consideration or I won't. But I don't let those things affect me, because we are all on our own given path at any given moment. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Judy. Really appreciate those thoughts. Star 6, who's next?
Marlies, good morning.
Marlies, good morning.
Yeah, we were traveling, so I was just listening. Going out Friday and coming back from Arizona yesterday. But I just wanted to also share a little personal experience. I know I've talked on this subject before about my own upbringing and having all those inferiority complexes. But then having been introduced to also a wonderful network marketing company that really changed my life, and learning about these principles and putting it into practice in my daily life. I had two little young children at that time, a stay-at-home mom, and just concentrating on this and wanting to convey these kind of truths and principles also to my young sons. And my younger one, the older one is the typical loving kind of peacemaker. He is a psychotherapist now. But the younger one was always, was like the warrior. And he also was really quick to always criticize everyone and everything, and also had the highest standards for himself. He always wanted to be the best, and so was also very obviously very critical with himself. And anyone who is would also reflect that back in anyone else, you know, around you that you're dealing with. So wanting to help him, and he realized that he really was not happy that way. I had a wonderful tape at that time based on the Course in Miracles that helps you visualize a person that you absolutely do not like, and somehow you just select something good in that person, and that's what you dwell on, and you just also say to yourself, I left that person for this or that quality. So it was along that line, and he was willing to listen to this tape every night as he was going to sleep, also said our prayers. And then along with that, we also then decided to write down a list of affirmations that he felt that really felt good for him, the way he wanted to feel, the way he wanted to have wonderful friends. He also only had usually just one very good friend, but not a lot of friends, because, as I said, you know, he was just so critical of everyone, and nobody really measured up to those his kind of standards, because he didn't feel that good about himself. And so we had all these affirmations, and he just, yeah, really religiously just would say those to himself and read them every night and also every morning before he actually left for school. He also learned to say, Mom, I'm a winner, right, as he left for school. and then even my older son, then later on, we could really see the changes in him. And my older son at one point said, you know, Mom, I'm just so proud of, you know, of Kent, because you wouldn't believe that, how much he is loved and liked. There's not anyone who doesn't like him and be around him, and he is just so caring and helpful to everyone. And I'm just really proud of him. And I could tell he was just so much happier within himself. And it took a long time, you know. It really it did not happen overnight. I didn't know about the effect on the brain also of eating a lot of sugar and any of that. And we know that also has a lot to do with it. But to know what is possible on a spiritual level, to really reach out to the soul and be able to make the changes there and putting that into practice, just the way I learned to kind of practice it. I would sit in the car and I would just think of the other people driving by and just saying to them from my heart, I love you and have a wonderful day, and actually saying it out loud. And that took a lot of, how should I say, it took extra energy by the time, because it would be just the thoughts always, and I knew the words would be stronger than any thoughts. And then actually starting to actually verbalize those kind of words, it really made them real for me. And the more I did that, the more I could let go of judgment and criticism and really looking for the good in other people and knowing anyone who is so critical and is so negative and, you know, is always a call for love. Someone who really needs that extra help and understanding and support and love. And that's what we can be here for. Be that kind of person in sharing that kind of wonderful, positive energy with them. Oh gosh, it's getting late already. Okay, that's all I wanted to say. Thank you so much, and I'm so excited to hear Bill again, knowing he's doing better and knowing how you are handling any criticism, obviously, of anyone who just is not able to just really, who absolutely just compares him or herself and does not want others to move faster or be more successful. So again, it's just a call for love and help on their part. And great that you're handling it so beautifully, because you're the greatest, you're the best, and we absolutely, everybody just loves you. And yeah, we all do. Thank you so much, Paul.
Marlies, thank you, and we love you. Thank you for sharing those experiences and those very insightful comments. Appreciate that. Folks, to finish up the call here real quick, we really had a lot of value on the call today, and I was jotting down notes, and there's a few gems that I'm definitely going to be writing in my journal, and I wanted to just run through those, some really good one-liners that came from the call. Don't corner me. I live in a circle. Nobody kicks a dead dog. Supply of free advice far outstrips the demand. I will take constructive criticism from you if you're making more money than me. Humor is the lubricant that allows us to move through rough spots in life. We are not meant to be a mediocre someone else. We're meant to be the best us. Ladies and gentlemen, we've had a lot of value on the call today, a lot of wisdom. Let us take what we've learned. Let us eliminate the fear of criticism. Let us take counsel from those whom we trust. And let us move forward with faith in ourselves, faith in our major definite purpose, faith in the infinite. Let us have a plan. Let us take action today, ladies and gentlemen. And let us all move together in a spirit of harmony and unity towards our ideal futures. Make it a fabulous day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call.